Welcome, everyone, to Talia Tuesday on the Blueprint Podcast, where we dive deep into the realms of confidence and assertiveness with our co-host, Talia Bombola. As a licensed marriage and family therapist and specialist in confidence and assertiveness, Talia brings a wealth of expertise and insights to our discussions. Join us each Tuesday as we explore practical strategies, personal anecdotes, and empowering advice to help you cultivate the confidence and assertiveness you need to thrive in all aspects of life. Get ready to unlock your full potential and build the life you desire with Talia and Jason as your guides. Welcome back to your day on the Blueprint Podcast. We have Talia Bombola joining us today to cover some more messages that came from Instagram. And you guys, let me tell you.
Oof.
So this is going to be about the avoidant today. And we're going to read these. I've got two of them that I'm going to read off to you real quick. And then we're going to dive into them and go line by line. Oh, so one comment starts out with, "This is bullshit. You like someone or you don't. If people had balls in today's society, they wouldn't need excuses like this to get away with treating people like shiznit." Mm. That's not what he said, but I don't want to turn this into a swearing podcast, unfortunately. Unfortunate. I don't care.
We're here.
I've got a clean rating on the show, so I'd like to keep that if I can.
Understood.
The next comment goes, "Avoidance are so fake and worst, because why did you text so much earlier and why now suddenly you're acting avoidant? If you were like this before, we wouldn't even fall in love. Screw fakers, man."
And when you texted me that comment, I texted you back. I'm like, that's the point. Like, that's the point of avoided attachment, that if you were like this before, we wouldn't even fall. Duh. Yeah, but you don't know that in the beginning.
That's one of the hallmarks. And it's why we often tell people, or at least I do, to slow things down a bit in the beginning of your relationships. You know, society has kind of driven us to this place where it's like, oh, 3-date rule. And do we really want to be in that? So again, it goes back to goals, values, and standards. We're not going to dive into that, but we are going to dive into these questions or statements or comments.
Yes.
Dive into these comments line by line. So let's go back to the first one. This is bullshit. You like someone or you don't.
Not true.
Is that? I was going to say. So why is that not true?
I think it's more obvious when you don't like someone. So I don't know if you've ever been on a date where it ends, whether it's the first date or second date, and you kiss the person and you feel like nothing for them, or you feel like, ooh, it literally is your body chemistry trying out their body chemistry. When you feel the spark and the tingle, it's like your DNA is mixing to see if it would be a good fit genetically for you to reproduce. That's like why you feel the spark with some people and not. Most people are like, oh, it's because they're this. I'm like, no, it's like evolutionary psychology. Sorry to burst your bubble.
You know what that brings up for me is that meme where the woman's like staring off into the distance and all the numbers are flying mm-hmm. by her head.
Yes.
Right.
Yes,
as you're engaging in that kiss, it's like, yes. Is this going to work? Does the math work out?
Yes, you're testing it. So I don't think it's necessarily true. It's not binary that you like someone or you don't. It's not always that obvious. I think I should say it that way. Sometimes it's very obvious when you don't like the person, separate from the whole chemistry kiss, because you're just like, this just isn't a vibe. We don't have the same values, goals, standards, etc. I don't want to put my parts near their parts. So we're definitely not ever going to be a fit. That is more obvious. But when you like someone, because as we've talked about, there's so much that goes into it. Do you match my childhood template? Do you match my wound or my wisdom? There's so many ways to say it. We don't necessarily know if we like someone, or we do know that we like someone, but we don't know why. Oh, there's just something about them. Well, who do they remind you of? Is this going to be some repetition compulsion from childhood that you finally feel like you can heal yourself with this person? So I don't always think it's so binary, especially because this is separate from avoidant. And then we can break down that next sentence, because I just feel like that's very intense. Clearly this person's going through something.
So this is where I want to add in. Do you follow HOMATH?
Yes.
So HOMATH developed Ikonomics.
Yes.
And if you guys don't already follow HOMATH, it's really just a great channel. He's on YouTube, now on Instagram and TikTok as well. I'm happy to plug his information. Just because one, it's funny. Two, it's done through really artistic illustrations. And three, it's just a lot of it becomes common sense or logical ways of thinking when you start to look at it. So nowadays we talk about icks and what is an ick? And this is something that can happen over a period of time. You're dating somebody, you're 3 months in, 6 months in, 9 months in, and then all of a sudden you get presented with, I don't like the way they're breathing. I don't like the way they're chewing their food. I don't like the way they're doing these particular things. And man, that's really turning me off to such a high degree that I am icked out. And then you proceed to break up with that person because of that particular ick. Now, is it the ick that's causing that? Or was there something else going on that was happening within the relationship and we brought up an issue or problem in order to remove ourselves because we have to have that part of our story that this other person is the reason why I'm removing myself from the situation instead of saying there are things that are not working out in this relationship and that's the reason why. So we're actually lying to ourselves in order to break up with that person. My point to all that being in the very beginning is that your feelings can also change. So you might have the sparks in the beginning and that might be really cool. And then 9 months down the road, a year, 18 months, all of a sudden you're just in this place of, man, I'm not feeling it. And I don't know what happened.
Yeah. Well, we move from in the beginning, there's more passionate love and limerence is what it's called in psychotherapy terms. And then your hormones shift and change. I've done a lot of, can I think of which ones now? No, but podcasts and articles on this. You can find them on my therapy website. And I wrote one specifically on the ick because is it a pet peeve that you don't like that anybody does it? Or is this an ick that developed over time where you're like, I just don't like the way I use those things. Like, have you always chewed that way? It's because the hormonal shift has happened where you're not in that limerence where it's like, I love them. Like the sun shines out their eyes. They're perfect. And then you start to see them for a person when those love chemicals settle down and you're like, oh, and then that's when you get to decide, do you want to commit and make it long-term? That you're going to see past these, or do you want to call it quits? And it's not only lying to the other person. Sometimes it's lying to yourself.
Yeah.
And it is lying to the other person. And I think it was on the Couples Guide podcast that I did an episode on like three sides to the truth. Sometimes people don't even know they're lying because they're telling you what they think is true. Then they go do the work on themselves. And years later, they're like, oh, wait, that's really what it was. So it's not that they intentionally were lying to you. They just actually didn't know what truth to give you at the time that you asked. So with this, like, if you
they're literally bypassing their own thought process.
Exactly. Yeah. They don't have enough. They don't have the insight that you want from them at that time to give you an honest answer. And if you like someone or you don't, it's not, that would be an on off switch. That would be just deciding every day, like, I like you. And then the next day I don't like you. That's going to make you feel like you're on a roller coaster. And the person's next point that if people had balls in today's society, they wouldn't need excuses like this to get away with. I don't think people do need excuses. I think there are people out there who treat other people very poorly without an excuse. Sometimes it's attributed to an attachment style. Most of the time, though, the person doing the attribution of the attachment style is the anxious person in the relationship or the dynamic with the avoidant, attributing it to their avoidant attachment style, when sometimes people are just a-holes. Attachment style aside, that's just that person. Maybe they're emotionally immature. Maybe they're wounded. Maybe they just never learned empathy. They didn't learn common, you know, courtesy. Again, we want to be very wary of not attributing everything to an attachment style because they're fluid. They can change if you want them to change. It's only when you make it a part of your identity that you're going to be less likely to want it to change, because then who are you going to be? Well, I used to be avoidant. Now, who am I? Don't get so tied up in, I have to be this way because I have this kind of attachment style or this diagnosis, or it's not a diagnosis to be very clear, but like, I have anxiety. I can never do this. Not true. You are not your diagnosis. You are living with it, or you have it, or you experience it sometimes, but it's not who you are as a person. So I don't think people need excuses like this. People can just do it because they're not nice people.
Right. But we have to attribute it to something. And so in someone's mind, they're sitting there saying, this is just an excuse to be a really horrible person.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing that I want people to get from this is at some point, you really have to start looking inward at yourself. And it does go back to your goals, values, and standards that you set for yourself for a relationship with you. And then what are you willing to tolerate? What are you willing to navigate through? And are you willing to do that with another person if they come to you and they present you with the option of, yeah, I do want to work on this. Great. Wonderful. That's awesome. High five. Good job. I love that you want to work on this with me. Let's do that. But at the same time, you have to say, you know what? Not everything gets attributed to that attachment style. This could be something that's going on inside of me, and I need to figure that out and why I'm angry or frustrated with this person.
Mm-hmm. Enough to comment on some random person's Instagram for all to see.
Yeah. Again, so the blame, we often like to blame what's outside of us for what's going on inside of us. Mm-hmm. And why do people do that?
In the beginning, I think people rationalize externalization because it's easier for them to keep themselves in a positive position. So when something good happens to me, then I attribute it to my work. It was my hard work that I got the promotion. But when I get fired, it's because my boss was the worst person in the world. So when you're looking at different types of attributions and making yourself look better or look worse, of course you want to take the credit when things go well, but you don't want to take the credit when things go poorly. So it's a way to protect your ego primarily. And it's also a way to keep some level of your psyche intact so you don't have to take accountability in some ways. And I don't think people often have it modeled to them how to not just externalize when things go poorly. It's like, oh, well, we broke up. The number one question I tell people to ask themselves and to the other person when they're dating a new person, what did you contribute to the end of your last relationship? Not why did you break up? What did you contribute? And that the answer that you get, it will tell you a lot about that person's emotional intelligence, because they could answer, I could have texted more, or I did text too much, or I could have been there more. Like, what lessons have they learned from something ending? Because we contribute to both the beginning and the demise of things. And it could be a mutual breakup. That could be the honest answer. We realized we grew apart. It wasn't fair to each other. Like, they could explain it that way. But I do think too many people externalize, well, they were the worst person in the world. It's like, okay, well then, why would you put up with it? Like, you still have a participation in that you let somebody treat you that way. Why would you, not victim blaming, but truly look at accountability. Why would you put up with that relationship if you want to be treated better? Why stay with somebody who did? And it's not all about the other person, but it's so quick to judge. It's so easy to judge, and people are so quick to judge the other person and make it all about the other person so they can stay in clean conscience. If we really wanted to dive deep, it goes back to object relations in psychoanalysis, that I want to stay the good object. And if I never learned how to be both a good object and bad object in the same person, that's where you see a lot of parents split. Also, when you bring up, this part of my childhood was great, but this could have been even better. And the parent goes, well, I guess I failed as a parent. They never learned to tolerate the bad object or the shadow parts inside of themselves. So if you shine a light on it, then the other person is going to not take it well, so to speak. And they will try to then be like, okay, well, if you think I'm a bad object, I'll just entirely become the bad object. So in an effort to avoid being seen as that, I will make the other person what I don't want to be.
Chloe is, I ordered Judy Ho's other book.
Yes.
Because I've almost finished reading it or listening to it. Yeah. The one on self-sabotage. And I'm like, it's got too many exercises in it to not own it. So
smart.
So now I own it. Okay. Hopefully Chloe's done. So then there was the second comment. Avoidance are so fake and worst, because why did you text so much earlier, and why now suddenly you're acting avoidant?
It's all an act.
Yeah.
You caught me.
You got me.
The whole time. Avoidance, they're not fake. Avoidance actually are in a lot of pain because they don't want to be engulfed by their intimate relationships. They also at times struggle with feeling like they can give enough for the other person to be satisfied. And that can in turn have them feel like they are not enough, as like self-worth, like demonstrative action versus self-worth. So they're not fake. Like, a lot of the avoidant people I talk to do not want to be avoidant. They actually do want the closeness. They just don't know how to get it or to tolerate when it does happen to them. Why did you text so much earlier, and why suddenly acting avoidant? So if I really, really want a new job, let's say, and I put all of my efforts towards to getting the new job, but I'm kind of afraid of it, right? Maybe there's some risk involved in this new career, and I finally get the notice that I'm hired. It's like, oh, some part of me maybe believed I would never get it. Some part of me wanted it really badly, but doesn't know if I could sustain it. So we might introduce self-sabotage into the equation, which is most often the fail-safe kind of protest behavior of the avoidant. I want you next to me, but not close to me. That's a little too close. I can only tolerate you in small doses because it's not about you. It's that I only feel comfortable not being engulfed in small doses around you. So we can't take it personally when the avoidant person needs space. And that's the hardest part for anxious people, because space equals abandonment for the anxious, but space equals safety for the avoidant. And then we're pitted against each other like magnets. So they're not acting avoidant. Also, they're exhibiting maybe avoidant attachment tendencies would be a more accurate description. And that, like I texted you, that's the point. If you were like this before, we wouldn't even fall in love. Yes, agreed. And that's by design, because if I was like this before, you wouldn't have gotten close to me. I do want to be close, but I'm afraid of being close. So where am I going to, like, where does the overlap come from? And that's from both people who are insecure, who often are magnetized toward each other, doing the work. Can I take one step closer to you and feel comfortable? And can I stay here and not run to you and try to glue myself to you? You have to be able to hold that person in your mind, we call it like the mind's eye, without actually seeing them. And that this goes all the way back to like object permanence with emotions from childhood. Again, in psychoanalysis, it's like, can I know that you are there for me and love me and hold you in my mind's eye even when I don't see you? And some people never develop that object permanence with the love of their primary caregivers, hence why it gets acted out in adulthood. So I would say acting out would be more accurate than acting in this case, description wise.
Yeah, it's so interesting. That brings up for me the image of, you know, the young kid, the dad's getting ready to go to work and trying to leave the house. And the young kid runs up and like literally just grabs around the shin and the calf and wraps themselves around their foot. Yeah. Like, you can't leave.
Don't leave.
Yeah. And then, of course, they got to go to work. Time to make the donuts. And yeah, unfortunately, those moments in time that we think are simple, and we often don't recognize the power and the emotional impact that something like that could have, especially if it's repeated over time. But it can be a single incident, right? And it doesn't have to be like this grand thing that happens over, you know, over a lifetime. It can be that one simple moment that you get presented with that, you know, really solidifies that part of your attachment style in that time, in that part of your life. Because again, attachment is more of a spectrum. And throughout your life, there's going to be different things that happen that can cause you to become, you get the job, you get better pay, you have health insurance. Now you feel more stable. All of a sudden, you can move more into a secure space and you're not as reliant on all these other things that you were reliant on before, because you've created and cultivated some sort of sense of stability for yourself within yourself because you're doing these things. And I think that goes unnoticed a lot in the comment sections, because people are reliant upon social media for the bulk of their information. They're not going through and reading 250 pages of a book and then taking notes and writing this stuff down, reviewing their notes, and then making sure that they understand and comprehend the topic that is being presented to them. And then how does that relate to your life and your experiences? And how can you then deploy this in real time? You just don't have time for it. And I understand that. But instead of getting upset in comment sections, take some time, read 10 pages of a book, find something that interests you, you know, do what I just said, take the notes, make sure that you understand it and use that as a way. This is personal development. That's what we're talking about right now. It's personal development. It's self-education. That's a power that you have to be able to push that needle forward in your life and to give yourself some sort of semblance of safety and security, because you're cultivating that in the moment for yourself. And that's just one tool.
Mm-hmm. And if people spend as much time reading books, educating themselves, there's a lot of information on YouTube from therapists. Like, there are qualified people on social media who are talking about this. However, nothing will replace you going in and doing the work of, why is this, I'm putting this in quotes, whatever it might be, this person, this job, this experience, this attachment conundrum, why is this affecting you in the way it's affecting you? And if you came to myself or somebody who practices from my lens, we will go back to childhood. We will be looking at your subconscious beliefs. We will be looking at the counter transference and transference. We will be looking at, what are you projecting? What are you introjecting? Like, there are so many ways to take accountability. And looking at what you write in the comments on Instagram as a way to guide you of like, what inner work do I need to do? Why did this post trigger me? And can that trigger then have me go inward of, ooh, I related to that post a little more than I would have liked. What can I do about it aside from comment? Is there a book? Is there this? Somebody just answered one of my questions with like, I forget what the topic was. That like, what can you share about this topic that we wouldn't get from a book? Because I always recommend books because I'm, what is the bibliophile? Somebody who loves books. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My therapist said that. So as somebody who loves books, I always recommend books because you can have your own experience with a book. Because everybody has their own imagination. So I always recommend books. And for this person who commented like, well, they were acting, they're not acting. And oftentimes, why are we, if they are acting, then why are we even casting ourselves in that person's play? Like, I don't have to be their co-author. I don't have to be their co-star. I could read a book and change my whole trajectory and be like, I'm never going to get on the stage with an avoidant again. Not to discount avoidance, but if it's too triggering for you to continue doing the work on yourself while being in a relationship with avoidant, then they're probably not the style for you. That doesn't mean they're unworthy of being in relationships. We shouldn't just ship them all off on an island. If that were the case, you'd ask avoidance the same thing. They would say the same thing about anxious people. Like, this is the new trend, is to label everybody as an attachment style. Like, we're all people. We're all going through it. Please do your own work to understand what you are going through specifically. Like, social media is a great place to start, but it's not the end all be all. It's the jumping off point for the self-development.
Thank you all for tuning into today's episode of Talia Tuesday on the Blueprint Podcast with Talia Bombola. Remember, building confidence, self-love, and assertiveness is a journey, and each step you take brings you closer to your goals. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast for more insightful conversations and practical tips to support your personal growth. And head over to my Stand store to sign up for the 21-Day Self-Love Challenge on sale now. And you can also drop a question for Talia and I for the podcast. Until next time, keep embracing your strengths, asserting your boundaries, and living authentically. Take care, and we'll see you next Tuesday on the Blueprint Podcast.